Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart Talk with Miss E. Today is Wednesday, March 23rd, already in the year 2011. It's amazing how quickly the month and the year has gone over. We're already into the first quarter. And I want to welcome all of our listeners to Heart Talk with Miss E. And March is a couple of things. One, it's National Women's Month. And it's also National Social Work Month. And I don't know about you, but my experience has been that for the majority of our social service agencies, the social workers are generally women. I see some change in that happening these days. So I believe that we have reason to celebrate both, at least for myself personally and for the many of the others that I know. I actually wasn't even aware that March was National Social Work Month, so it's very appropriate because this is also the month of my birthday. So I'm a woman, I'm aging, and I have social work in my heart. Even though I'm not currently doing social work per se, but I believe that if you have a heart for our youth and you have a passion, that our work is, you know, it's a part of the village. We may not be on the payroll. We may not have the title. We may not even have the degree. But the state of our youth is a social issue. And we all, as members of the village, have a responsibility to work. And if you're familiar with my book, it's entitled, It's Hard Work Being the Village That Raises a Child. I actually saw on Facebook a post by a young lady who had commented about giving just kudos to her social worker. She's an adult now. And she mentioned that her social worker had been there for her all of these years and that her social worker had even, I think she said, lost her job or she jeopardized her social worker's job. So if she's on the line tonight, I will look forward to speaking with her. But that just brought up some issues to my mind, because no longer being a social worker, but being a therapist and continuing to be a child advocate, also having been a foster parent and an adoptive parent, having to deal with social workers, I've seen many different styles of social work, and realizing that each child is different, each child does require, you know, a certain different type of person to work with them. However, some things to me are just basic. And I've seen, unfortunately, very few that I would want to be managing my life. And for our organization, For a Child's Heart, during Foster Care Month, National Foster Care Month, which is in May, we have an award that we give to a social worker who's shown exemplary not only commitment, but caring and case management for the youth and their caseload. And for a moment, my brain is drawing a blank. But I think the award is called the Heart. Actually, I guess it is the Heart Worker Social Work Award. I'll have to come back to that. And perhaps if any of our listeners on, I know that there are actually a couple of recipients that are here local currently still that I think have just done a wonderful job and as a therapist have really been beneficial in helping me to carry out the treatment plan of the young people because they cared about the children as children. And one of my big issues is children being moved and the placements being disrupted without there being any sense of closure. And one of the social workers, my, you know, just deepest gratitude goes to him. Because of him, I have been able to maintain contact with a young man whose placement disrupted immediately, and the young man was crying out and actually walked to my office one day. I was actually in the middle of a board meeting and walked in to tell me that his placement was disrupting the following day and the social worker was coming to get him. And all that evening, I was just stressed. And one of my, knowing what this child had already been through, and my board, one of my board members was a foster parent. And I called her after and said, "You remember that young man? Won't you just take in one other child?" Because I was concerned about him leaving. And the following day, that night, actually, I called in the middle of the night and left a message with the social worker whom I'd never met. And that next morning, that social worker called me probably about 8 or 8:30, explained to me what was happening, and made the effort to stop and bring that child to my office before moving the placement, which was going to be in a different county, a different city, and kept me abreast of what was going on, and actually advocated to make the tie for that child to continue his work with our program. And I was just so impressed because so many people don't have the time, and I know the caseloads are heavy. A lot of times people just don't have time, but I believe just like anything in our lives that's important to us, that's more than a paycheck, we have to make time. And I realize people have other things going on. And fortunately, when I was a caseworker, I was single, had no children, so I could do the long hours. I could take the trips out of town, and I realize not everybody has that. But there needs to be something that happens so that these things can be taken into consideration. A lot of times it's just an inability, but a lot of times it's not even taken into consideration what the needs are. So before we take on any callers, and I haven't even looked in the chat room to see there, I see a few people on the line, and I don't see anyone in the chat room. Okay, cool. So I don't have to switch screens. but everyone who knows me knows that I go by the Heart Lady, and our organization being For a Child's Heart. And my motto is that everything we do should be done with heart. And that means to be done with compassion, to be done with purpose, to be done with sincerity, to be done with energy and enthusiasm. So this evening, I decided to address what I believe being a hardworking social worker means. And if you have pen and paper, perhaps you might want to write some of these down. And none of them are unfamiliar to you, but I want you to really be able to look at them, whether you are currently a social worker, if you are a former foster youth, if you are someone that's contemplating going into the field of social work, or anyone else that's working in the village, because I realize that there's a lot of interplay that goes on sometimes between social workers and the school district, as well as day programs and special needs agencies. But one of the first things in the word heart, that starts with the letter H, I say is hope. I believe a hard-working social worker who's working from the heart has to have a sense of hope for the child and be able to convey that to the child. I believe that, you know, there's a scripture that says, without a vision, and in my mind, vision meaning dream, meaning hope, meaning faith. Well, if you don't have any hope, the people perish. And I believe that's exactly what's going on with our young people today. A lot of our young people have no hope. And I was spent 3 hours with a young man today who basically told me that some of the choices he had made, he really felt like he had nothing to lose. And that really got me. And so when our young people are just making reckless decisions, it's important to give them a sense of purpose. We tell them things that they should do, but do they really buy into it? Do we give them something that really grasps, that gives them that inner drive? So giving them a sense of hope, and I have to start everything off with a double. And not only hope, but honesty. when we have our children and our caseloads, because sometimes the pain is almost unbearable to us to hear the truth of what may have happened in their biological families, or what the potential is for ongoing placement. We tend to maybe twist the truth or lie or totally avoid the situation. And one of the things one of my actual foster youth that I lived with me had told me, she said, you know what, one of the things that I appreciate is that you were always honest with me. She said, a lot of the things that weren't told to me, she said, you told me, that way I knew what I could expect or not to expect. She said, and that made a difference, because even as a child, I knew that certain things were inevitable. But if someone told me, it validated the feelings or the anxiety that I may have had, and maybe even lowered that. So hope and honesty. And sometimes we feel like being honest with our children and our youth takes away the hope, but actually not. I think what it does is also enables them to trust us. And if you can trust someone, that also gives you a sense of hope. Because if you can't trust anyone, you say, you know, well, she lied to me, he lied to me, they put me out, I don't know who I can trust anymore. So that sense of honesty and hope, I believe, are very, very, very crucial. And the other thing I'll add, make it a triple play for H, when I'm talking to caregivers, I say it's also important to have a sense of humor. Unfortunately, in the social work field, I believe that sometimes as case managers, we may use that as a defense, because sometimes the work can be so overbearing, so painful. We use humor as a defense that sometimes blocks our ability to have the characteristic which is coming up next, and that's empathy. Empathy is not being sympathetic with the situation, but it's really having a true understanding and a sense, a feeling of what a child may be going through. I believe that when we get so busy, you know, pushing and shoving cases and doing placements, sometimes we take the humanness out of our case management work. And, you know, it's just moving the numbers, playing musical chairs. Oh, we got this many blowing out this week. This one has to be placed. Let me see if I move this from this placement, I'll have someone that can take this one in, and this one has two beds. Not really thinking about what it would feel like to be in that child's place. And I think of the word, when we can't really pull up that empathy, the word that I have to go with that is imagine. Imagine what it would be like. I read a book about a year or so ago entitled, here goes the brain again. It'll come to me in a minute. But the author is Teresa Cameron. And I was actually at the Los Angeles Black Book Expo, and there was a distributor there. And I went to the books and saw this one that stood out to me. And whatever the word, the title is, it had to do with foster care. And it was like, wow. And I picked it up. So I read the book, and I could not put it down. And it's not unusual for me to hear stories or read stories about children in foster care. But what was different about this one, this lady grew up in my era, in the 60s. And as she talked about the issues in her life, she talked about, you know, some of the historical milestones that I recall. And it put me even in an even different place of being able to have empathy. It's like, okay, as an adult, I can look and see what it might be like for the kids growing up today. But that took me way back and imagining, you know, what if I had been in her situation during the time that she was recalling the events of her life. And it gave me even a deeper sense of empathy. And I even actually, I contacted her and talked to her and shared with her how her book impacted me. And it's just amazing. So sometimes we have to take ourselves to another level in order to have a greater sense of impact with our young people, and we can always grow. For people who have been in the field for years often state that, you know, well, I've just been doing this for years. Like some people say in the church, you know, I've been in the way for 50 years. And somebody say, yeah, that's just it. You've been in the way. But we want to be able to pave a way and show a way. and give something to our young people. And don't always just say, you know, well, I understand, or just say, yeah, well, anyway, this is just the way it is. Even though it is what it is, just to have some understanding. The next letter in heart in being a hardworking social worker is to advocate, to be able to be an advocate no matter what. One of the biggest frustrations I have is being going to a social worker and asking for something in behalf of the child, and they said, you know, well, we don't usually do it that way. Or the, you know, the budget is cut, or, you know, we'll just, we're not going to do anything. And I believe that our kids deserve to have somebody that's willing to stand in the gap. A lot of times we don't want to jeopardize our positions, or we don't want to get out of our comfort zones. And that's why I'm eager to hear this story about the social worker whose job was threatened because of the youth. Because, and it's not about breaking rules, it's just being willing to go the extra yard and sometimes speaking up to management about what it is that you're open and willing to do for a child. And I say, you know, no matter what, because we live in this world, but I believe also that, you know, that doesn't mean that we are necessarily of it. And a lot of times there's some rules and stipulations that we know are not in the best interest of the child. And there's a way around it. I'm not saying, you know, be non-compliant, or what's the word about when you don't, when you're being subservient to your supervision. But there's a degree that it's really important to have to go through. I remember once there was a case for one of the children on my caseload, and the father was in prison. And it was something about terminating the parental rights for the child to be adopted. And so, of course, you know, we had the district attorney representing the department. And I had gone through all, you know, this work to prepare this report, to go to the prison and visit the dad. And when we got in the court, she barely said two words. And the judge just said something, and I said, I was trying to get her to say what the major point I wanted to get across. And she just barely spoke up. She was just whispering. You know, I guess she was relatively young and glad to have a job, but to me that wasn't acceptable. So I raised my hand, and the judge said, yes, Ms. Polk. And I said, he said, okay, very well. I said, but I'm not finished. And he said, well, it doesn't matter. I said, but this is important. By the time I got back to the office, all the social workers were laughing because they said, oh, I hear you almost got arrested for being in contempt of court. So I didn't plan to go to jail, but to me it was important that someone has to speak up and advocate for our young people, and that it comes from the heart. And if you're not feeling it, you're not willing to do it. The other letter is R, to remember why you're doing it in the first place. And I hope that the majority of our workers are doing this for more than just a paycheck. I think people start off doing it because they have a sense of goodwill and wanting to make a difference in the world, and by the time they get burned out by all of the bureaucracy and the, you know, just a sense of hopelessness, and looking at the casework and looking at some of the generations of children in the foster care system, they lose that fire. But it's important to tap into why am I here? Because my take is anyone doing any job, if they don't like it and don't want to be there, they really shouldn't be there. And that's one of the reasons I named my nonprofit organization For Child's Heart. There's a story about that, behind that, with my foster son. However, one of the things that occurred to me, that whenever I get frustrated and I'm not pleased with the way things are going, that I can come back and remind myself, everything I am doing is for a child's heart. And sometimes I've had to go back to do that. It's like, okay, what's the purpose here? Why am I doing this? For a child's heart, to make a child's heart warm. So remember why you're doing it. And the last is the T. Treat the plans that you're making for this child as if the child were your own. I see people make decisions for kids that they wouldn't do if they were their own child, if they are a caring parent. And I just shake my head. It's like, okay, perhaps I would probably have raised my child up differently. Perhaps my child would have some different values than some of the children may be displaying. And you would, some people say, well, my child would never do that. But we can't say that. And so I believe that really, they really are all our children. If we have taken the commitment and the commission to be able to provide whatever it is we're doing in the role of a social worker, I believe that we should keep in mind these are our children. So with that, I'm going to open the lines. I see a couple of hands up, so I guess that means me, you want to speak. So I hope that you've gotten something out of my little blurb about the heart of social work and being a hardworking worker. And I am going to call on or open up the line for, let me find my switchboard again. There it is. Someone calling from the 256 area code. So you are on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. This is Ms. Evelyn. Who am I speaking to?
This is the girl who wrote the post on Facebook that you're talking about.
Okay. Actually, I think this is a different one, but would you share your name, please?
My name is Lucy.
Hi, Lucy. How are you?
I'm fine.
Great. Thank you. You're from Alabama, right?
I am from Alabama. I have lived in Alabama all my life.
Really? All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Actually, you had a story, but what really started me to do this call was that somebody pretty much lost their job, and her name is different. But why don't you share with our listeners the story that you shared on Facebook on the wall of the incredible Unstoppable Foster Youth, which was started by Mr. Derek Clark.
Yes.
What was your experience?
I was 10 and a half when I went into foster care, and it was in 1965. And things were a lot different then, but the lady that, there were six of us, and she took us in her heart. And as we grew up, we stayed in touch with her. She stayed in touch with us. But, and she made sure that my siblings and I always knew where each other were and visits. And when I grew up, she was still working. And I knew at times that she was doing things that she probably shouldn't have. She didn't break the rules, but she bent them. You're supposed to have a court order to remove a child, and sometimes if she thought that child needed to be removed, she would take it in the middle of the night and worry about the court order later. And not a lot of people know, but it was, she would bend the rules a little bit. She would give it as soon as she could, but if she really thought the child was in danger, and I know of several occasions she spent her own money for the foster children to have things. If one of them wanted a bicycle, she bought bicycles, shoes, clothes. She was just incredible. Incredible.
Wow. And I love it what you said in the very beginning. You said, she took us in her heart.
Yes. Oh, yes,
how
she did.
How does it feel as a child to feel that someone had taken you into their heart? Because, you know, we use that term figuratively, you know, and we sort of throw it around. But what was it that gave you that feeling? You know, you said, you know, she did these things. But as a child, how did it make you feel?
Well, I was just a little girl, and it was a scary experience. It really was. But there were hugs and sitting in her lap and talking, and she actually listened. And so that I went back to my birth parents when I was six, and then I went back in foster care when I was 12. And the social worker I got after that was not quite like that. You know, when you get to be a teenager, there are things that happen to you that you need to tell someone. And I did not have that trust in her and the faith in her that I had in the first social worker. That she was new out of college, and she really didn't have a clue. She did not have the heart to do it, I don't think. It was just a job for her, I do believe.
Right. And I think that newness is also a different thing. I think so many people are just concerned about doing it the right way. You know, am I doing it by the book? And I have interns that work with me, and one of the things that I've stated is that it's one thing, you know, to know the protocol. It's another thing to know all of the clinical terminology and the diagnosis and all of that. But if you aren't able to connect your heart with it, it has very little impact. I won't say it has no impact because, you know, there's some impact, but we want to maximize this. And if we don't make an impression on the heart, because now you still remember that. And it's not even like, you know, you lived with her. It was like, it was just she did something that touched your heart that gave you a sense of warmth. She made your heart warm.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And And we were, I was like, I'm 48 now. We were like in our, I was in my 30s, and my sister is a little bit older. And we went to her home, and we spent the day, and it was just awesome right before she died. And she was just, she was just saying, y'all were always my favorites. Y'all were always my favorites. And she was so happy. So much that we came to visit her. And I mean, we had been out of foster care for 15 years or so. So
mm-hmm.
we got to visit her.
Wow. And you said something else, and I'm going to come back to it after I talk to the next person. But did you get to hear the little blurb I did before, you know, about the spelling out of heart, you know, the hope, the empathy?
I wrote it down. Not everyone has, some people have sympathy, but very few have empathy. You really
So would you say that she had a bit of all of those?
Oh, she's one of the most awesome humans I've ever met in my life. I miss her to this day.
Yes.
She worked for 40 years. She worked for 40 years and did so much for children.
Wow. That's amazing. And so can you think about how many social workers you had during the course of your... Pardon me?
After, when I went back into foster care when I was 12, I had the same one. So I was 18, and it was not, I was not ever comfortable with, because there were things that happened to me that I needed to tell her, and I don't know that she believed me, or I don't know, she just didn't do anything about them.
So she didn't validate your experience or your feelings and didn't listen to you. Right. And, you know, that's interesting, because for one thing, on one hand, it's fortunate that you have the same social worker, because the other thing that I experience is that our kids end up, you know, cases are just transferred left and right. And I have a case now where the social worker was transferred at the same time the child was moved to a different home. And I just felt so bad because there was nothing familiar. So fortunately, she has a CASA worker now. And the CASA worker was consistent, but it was in a different city, a different county. But the CASA worker is very committed, so we thank God for CASA workers now. So
in Alabama, hopefully they will get that implemented. They've been trying for years, and hopefully they will soon get the CASA worker implemented, I hope.
They don't? Well, we're going to have to make sure that that happens, because it has been, you know, something that I've seen for the most part has been extremely positive. And actually, there's a young man that I was a social worker to when he was 11, and he's now 38. And last year, he became a CASA worker, and I'm so proud of him. And I think it's been one of probably the most life-changing experiences in his life to be able to see that he came through everything and now is able to give back. And I just saw that it made a big difference in just his whole person. So that is awesome. Well, don't hang up. I'm going to put you on hold and check in with our next caller. And if something comes up, I'm sure you might have some other input for that, okay? Okay, thanks. We have someone from the 619 area code. Are you there?
Hey, Evelyn, it's Shay.
Hey, how you doing, Shay?
How you doing? Fine.
Wait.
Yeah. Listen to your show here. Doing a good job.
Well, thank you. So, do you have any comments on anything I said or about sharing any of your experience about a social worker who may have made a positive difference and what contributed to that?
Definitely. Well, two things. You mentioned earlier about the student you worked with today, the young person, saying that they didn't have, you know, any hope. And that really resonated with me. You know, I remember feeling that same way. My mom used to tell me that, you know, she loved me and everything was about me and la, 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 whatever. So when we were put into foster care, it made me feel like she lied to me, basically. You know, and she didn't love me and she didn't care about me. You know, and if the person that is supposed to love you and care about you doesn't, it does make you feel hopeless. It's like, well, why should I care about myself? Obviously, I'm not valuable, basically.
Right.
You know, and I definitely went through a period where, and I would say up until I was about 27, I mean, this was a long period, where I just felt like, You know, I used to have this saying, I'm like, I could die tomorrow and nobody would notice. Nobody would care.
Mm.
You know, when you feel like that, who cares what choices you're making? What difference does it make? You know what I mean? I was never suicidal, but it just didn't matter to me if I lived or died. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't actively trying to kill myself, but, you know, I would just put myself in situations that weren't always the best.
Right.
You know, and so that kind
of... The opposite of love and caring isn't hate, it's apathy.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the perfect way to put it. You know what I mean? Exactly. I didn't, you know, care one way or the other. And one of the things that I think helped get me through that period is one of the social workers I had. You know, and of course, you know, I had big sisters and all these different things that, you know, obviously were a piece of it as well. But the social worker that I had from 93 to 96, I aged out in 96, really, I mean, she... And I wish I could remember her name. I'm pretty sure it's probably in my files if I, you know, go to the county and all that. But she just, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen ATL with T.I., but he has this line where he says, you know, I believe in you even when you're too stupid to believe in yourself. You know what I mean? And that's, but that's how she was. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She was like, you're just being real stupid right now. But that doesn't mean I'm going to give up on you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I told her I wanted to be in business when I was, you know, in high school or whatever. And she set it up so that I could go meet this guy. And I don't even remember what he does now, but, you know, he was some kind of business owner or something. You know, and I walked up to him and I hugged him, you know, and I was like, hey, you know. And he looked at me like, what in the hell? But I hadn't been prepared for those kind of situations, you know, so I was doing what we did in my neighborhood, you know, on the block. And And so he basically really let me know and kind of ripped into me, you know, like that's not how we conduct ourselves, you know, in a business setting, you know. And it really, it hurt my feelings, but looking back, it was like the best thing that could have ever happened to me. You know what I mean? And I thank her for being able to, just take what I was saying seriously. You know, kids tell you, you know, I want to be this, I want to be that, you know, whatever. And I think a lot of times we have a tendency to just kind of poo-poo it. You know, oh, you're a kid, you don't know what you want, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But she really took it seriously, you know, and set up this meeting with this guy for me. And, you know, when I look back at some of the turning points in my life, that's definitely one of them. You know, while she was my social worker, she put me in a home where the lady wasn't feeding me, and I ran away. And so she, you know, tracked me down at school or whatever, you know. And I not to say she wasn't mad at me, but I don't remember her being mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
She just seemed
are showing anger
relieved.
Toward you.
Yeah, she just seemed more relieved than anything.
That
you know,
were okay.
For a lot of us, we're not used to that. You know what I mean? That's probably part of the reason we've been taken from our home. You know, sometimes our family members have a little, you know, a couple anger issues there. It just was a, I don't know, it just really made me feel, it made me feel really supported, you know. So wherever mm-hmm. she is, you know, Shayla Maria says thank you, you know.
And was that here in California?
Yeah, I was in foster care down in San Diego.
Okay. Well, if anyone knows, what's her name again? Oh, well, you can remember her name.
I don't know. I don't know her name. But 1993.
Okay, well, if anybody knows anyone in San Diego County that worked during the time from 1993 through 96.
Little brown girl, loud mouth. That's probably all of us.
Oh. But, you know, one of the most wonderful things is to be able to know that a kid remembers you, even if they don't remember your name. You know, you're that lady that had, you know, such and such, such. And it's a great feeling because you know that you've made a connection on some level. And there were so many things going on in your life. Trying to hold a name in your brain is the last thing that your brain cells had as a priority at the time.
So many names, but, foster homes, and you know what I mean? I can't keep them
But having
crazy.
That thing in your heart. So going through our list, and I keep saying list because it's not an acronym. I forget what the word is for it. I need to look it up again. But through our heart analysis, what are some of the characteristics you think that were more prevalent with her?
You mentioned the key is kind of what stuck out to me, and the, you know, trying to make the plans for the child as if they're your child. You know, I'm sure she had a million other cases, and I'm sure she, you know, did a million other things with her life, but I don't know, I just always felt like she really was listening to me and taking me seriously, you know. I don't know, I really appreciated that. I felt like I was more than just a case number, you know.
More than just a case number. I love that. And as Lucy was saying, that, you know, feeling that someone just really cared, that they had you, you know, in their hearts. And,
right?
And that they could trust them. That's beautiful. Thank you for your input. Stay on the line. I'm going to check in with another caller because I'm sure something else will come up that everyone might have something to say about.
Awesome.
Okay, thanks. We have a caller from the 704 area code. Are you there? Oops, I just muted you back out. Okay, are you
Hello?
There?
Yes. Yes, I am.
This is
can
Ms.
you hear me?
E. Thank you, too.
Ms. E, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, it's Jarena.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm sorry it's a little late.
Hear voices. That's okay. So what have you heard so far on our program today?
Well, I heard the last caller when she was, you know, explaining how she felt like she was more than just a case number to her social worker.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Well, do you have a story about a social worker who made a difference in your life or maybe more than one?
Well, I can't say that my experiences with social workers were that great while in the system. What I can say is once I got out the system, there were some workers who were helping me get my records. I feel like they did more for me while I was out, since I've been out the system, than they did when I was in, because I didn't get my experience with them during my 15 years in the system was not that great.
Years.
Not that they were
wow.
mean to me or anything. Not that they were mean to me, you know. Well, I did have one worker. Her name was Dawn Barnes. And I was in an independent living program. And they were not allowing me to manage my money. You know, they were getting funds, you know, from the state, and then they were getting funds because my father had died, you know, while he was in the military. And I was also working and going to school, and they were only allowing me to have $20 a week for food. And, yeah, come to find out the lady over that program, she was embezzling money. But my foster, my social worker, she stepped up and she said, look, Jarena is capable of managing her own money. And she would step up for me at times like that. And it's kind of, it makes me feel good because it's in my records. You know, I have my foster care records from the age of 4 until I was 18 now. And looking back over my records, I see what she did step up for me. So, yeah, I'm thankful for that.
Yes. And before you came on, I gave just a brief talk about, you know, what makes what are the characteristics of a social worker having heart. And I went through the letters H-E-A-R-T. And first I said that it's hope and honesty, empathy, being able to advocate, to remember why they were doing it in the first place, and to treat a child as if their own. So your worker definitely fulfilled the role of an advocate. You know, she stuck her neck out to rectify a situation that someone could have just said, you know, well, I don't know what's going on, and gone on about their business. So that is a component. So you had a worker who had some heart, and that meant something. You know, it did not fulfill every need but the fact that someone was willing to, you know, move and act on your behalf.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I was very, and I've been trying to find her ever since.
Wow.
Yeah,
and
but
so
she
her
was
name is,
she was a very young social worker. She had just finished at Hampt University. And she was, you know, she was very young in the field. But I do wish that social workers could pick up on certain cues when it comes to foster children, because a lot of times, you know, I would not verbalize things, but I would act out and do things.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, for years, and it's like I was trying to get their attention. I was trying to tell them things, but I didn't want to say it out of my mouth because I was in fear of being hurt. You know, I was in fear of retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wish
mm-hmm.
they would just pick up on other cues or have someone who is, let's say, a in-between person for the foster child and the social worker that the child and the social worker can talk to in confidence that has no dealings with the foster.
I was talking to my first caller, Lucy, about that, about the CASA. Now, what state are you in?
You're asking what state am I in?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in North Carolina, but I was in the system in Virginia.
Okay, so I'm wondering if they have currently have a CASA program, because you were talking about someone being in the middle, and I was saying that that has been a positive experience from a therapist point of view, working with kids to have, especially when they're going through so many disruptions, to have a consistent CASA worker. So I was just wondering if your state has them. I just found out that our first caller, Lucy, who's in Alabama, stated that they don't have a CASA program there.
Really? Now, that's the same as guardian ad litem, correct?
No, it isn't. The CASA worker is a court-appointed special advocate, and they go through training to be able to be the go-between between the social worker and the attorney and everybody else and the child to come in from just having the child's interests at heart. So you can look it up, and actually I will post it on HART's website. I've had a very positive experience here, and as I was stating earlier, a young man who I had the privilege of being a social worker to when he was 11 is now 38, and he became a CASA worker last year in another county here in California, and was just thrilled to be able to advocate and to speak up. And it's something that I think could probably be an ideal position, a volunteership for former foster youth, because I believe it can also be part of the healing process, the times when you had to be quiet or you felt that you had to be quiet and didn't speak up and no one spoke up for you. This is an opportunity mm-hmm. because you're speaking up for your inner child as well as the other. So, but you said some interesting things there about that. I'm going to open the lines to our first two callers, one from California, one from Alabama, who were both former foster youth, and let them perhaps respond to any of the comments that each other have made. So I have Lucy, and I have Shay, and somebody's not there. Okay. Welcome, ladies.
Hi.
Welcome back. Did anyone have any comments on anything that Jarena just stated? Or anything that you heard someone else say?
Trina was mentioning how somebody else was managing your money for you. And I don't even know why I didn't even think about it until you said that, actually. Like, it didn't even occur to me, like, they get money for this. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, I'm walking around hungry, can't get a bus pass. You know, this lady's getting a check. But it just didn't even really click for me right now until you just said it. I was like, oh. And then when you guys were talking about CASA, and I know this is ridiculous because I'm 33 years old, and it has never occurred to me that people were actually probably going to court, I guess, like you said, advocating and talking about what should happen to me and whatever. I have never been to court, ever, my whole time in foster care.
Wow.
Really?
Are you serious?
No.
How long did you spend in the system? How long were you in the system?
4 years. And I was
What age?
13 to 17.
Wow, no, you should have gone to court.
I just, you know what, y'all, it just never even occurred to me. You know what I'm saying?
So what about your yearly reviews, though? Your yearly reviews, you should have, Wow.
What are you talking about?
And what state is this?
What's interesting?
I
just recently had a case. I just recently had a case, and it was a 14-year-old. And what was different, the home that she and had just become certified because it was supposed to be an adoptive placement. It was a post-adopt placement. So the parents were not, you know, used to the system. So when the letter came from the court, you know, it said, had the youth's name on it, the foster parent had such respect for this child's, you know, confidentiality and everything, took the letter to her, said this is her. She said, but she wanted her to open it for her. And believe it, and the kid had never seen her. She's been in the care for like 2 years. She had never seen it before. She didn't even understand what it was about. And what happens is that the attorney, one, is supposed to talk to the kid prior to any court hearing and also tell them what is going to be discussed and recommended. I believe a child is also supposed to get a copy of the court report. There's a six-month review. There's a review every 6 months. And then, you know, there's another year from the date. And the youth is supposed to be, if they're over 12, they're supposed to have the right to appear in court. And I believe that's part of what the CASA worker is about. And so unless there was an issue related to the biological family, usually the foster family didn't show up, the kid didn't show up, and you go in there and it's over like in 2 minutes because basically the judge reads the recommendations to the social worker, from the social worker at the end of the report, and he just signs it, he or she just signs it, and they go on to the next case. And that's what I talk about, warehousing and railroading our kids through the system. Well, who sat down to read? And I used to get in trouble. I won't say get in trouble. I used to get reminded
that it
would be too long to do my court report because I wouldn't just copy what was already written. You know, if it came from another social worker, you know, generally what people would do is just cross out something and change it and send it. And that's how a lot of erroneous information got passed on about a kid, and it could go through all those years. And so that's one of the reasons when, even as a therapist, when I get a case, I talk to the child first and get some information before I even look at the files because 9 times out of 10, it's going to be jaded or there's going to be some erroneous information. Then I go back and read the child, and then I, you know, start to ask the child, you know, about things that are pertinent, and you'll find out there's a lot. So the judge, just, you know, they can't sit there and read all those hundreds of cases, you know, that come through there in the course of the day. So that's why the CASA person, I think, is good, and usually it's someone that has an ongoing relationship with the child, and they're actually speaking for the child and spending time with the child as opposed to the social worker who sees them, you know, every 30 days or the attorney who sees them once every 6 months or calls them on the telephone. So, yeah. And
so
just
if I got a copy of my file, they would have that stuff in there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you tried to get your files?
I called them at one time, but they were talking about it cost so much to have it copied and all of this, and I was just like, it's so long ago. You know, I was like,
Actually, what you can do, and actually if you post this on our page or on Derek's page, I know there was a dialogue going on at one time because a couple of the people that I know, actually one of the young men actually what they allow you to do is to sit there on the county, you know, premises and go through it. And I believe that you have the right to copy what you want out of it. And, you know.
I know with my situation, it took almost 7 years. It took me almost 7 years.
Ooh.
I had the lady who was she was a supervisor. She was a worker when I was in care. She had cancer, and she was out for a while. And they kept giving me the runaround. So it got to the point where I had to start doing my own research. And I told them, I had to say, look, I know that by law, meaning that I was ward of state at the age of 18. I never went back to my birth family. I was not adopted. You guys have to keep my records indefinitely. And I said, I have contacted I believe it was the Library of Virginia, you know, because everything is microfished and kept. Everything is supposed to be kept.
Right.
But they don't want to tell us. They don't want to tell us that. They want to act like, you know, but my records has so much in it, and if I wanted to be mean about it, I could sue the agency because it has abuse. I didn't know that people were calling in telling them that I was being abused in one of my foster homes, and they didn't do anything about it.
Wow.
Whoa. They kept me.
Lucy, are you still there?
Yes. I had a couple of comments.
Okay.
One was that I was moved around a lot, and I would get off the school bus, and the car would be sitting there. They never told me that I was going to be moved in a few days. It just happened. That happened like 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that I really didn't want to see my records. I don't care. I put that behind me. So I didn't want to see my records, so I never asked for them and never cared to see them. So that was the only 2 things I wanted to say.
Okay. Yeah, that disruptive placement. And to me, that goes along with the honesty. Nor the empathy. You know, imagine what it would feel like in being honest with a child. And that just happened with the same case I was just telling you about. The family called the social worker. The social worker called me the night before to tell me that she was coming to pick up the child at the school.
Mm-hmm.
So the child left home thinking that she was going, you know, to school and coming back home and never went to go back. I was furious. Actually, I literally got sick over that situation. But so that's something else. And I think, you know, I can't understand why someone would do that. I really can't, you know, because the part of that, even if I was requested to do that, I would just say, no, that's not in the best interest of the child. We've got to do something, unless that child is in threat of danger. So, again, that's part of being the open and the honesty about it and still give hope.
It made me live my life like anywhere I went, I wasn't going to be there long, and I knew it. You know, it made me know that I lived my life that way. I was just there, and one day I knew they would come and get me. I didn't know when, any day now. So,
We have like 9 minutes left on this call, believe it or not. It has gone by very quickly, and I'm so thankful for you calling on. And we have someone in a chat room, but they're not signed in, so they can't actually write. They just list as a listener. So they're out. But I just want to, because this call will be archived for people to listen to, what would each of you say, what are, you know, maybe the 2 strongest things that you would recommend for social workers in working in the foster care system? If you could tell them anything, you know, give me, you know, 1 to 3 things that you would really want them to integrate in their practice.
Number 1 would be advocate for that child. Stand up for that child. Advocate for that child.
Okay.
And find out what's going on. Pop up. Don't, you know, call and let the foster parents know that you're coming, because they always, I mean, it was, and it taught me, the system has taught me how to manipulate, because I see the social workers, they, you know, sometimes they weren't doing what they were supposed to do. They were sliding stuff across in court. And then the foster parents, they're not doing what they're supposed to do. They're pulling the wool over the social worker's eyes. So I just learned how to just live day by day, and it was just survival, you know. And I felt like, why should I say anything? Because this is just a job to hit people.
Okay. So basically hold them accountable. Monitor, and it's interesting because you mentioned the word earlier, attention, and I was debating whether to use the A or attention or advocate, but I'm going to use them both from now on, so thank you.
I'm going to say talk to the child, you know what I'm saying? And there's a difference between talking to somebody and talking at them. You know what I'm saying? Give that child a chance to respond back to what you're saying, you know what I'm saying? And don't take everything so personally. You know, we're taken out of the homes for a reason, obviously. You know, we're acting out or having an attitude or rolling our eyes or whatever. 9 times out of 10, it has very little to do with you. yeah. a lot of times what you represent. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Or the way you're presenting information to us. So don't take it all, you know, angry and get all pissy about it. Be the adult. Recognize that obviously I have some things going on. You know what I'm saying? And just be willing to engage with me. You know, just mm-hmm. let it go. Let it go. And the other thing would be, you know, I really want people who are social workers to understand that, unfortunately, it is a full-time job. You mentioned earlier, you know, that people feel like, well, I have a family and I have my own kids and whatever, and this is going to sound ugly, but maybe this isn't the job for you. You know what I'm saying?
Hello.
The kids are abused at 2 a.m. You know what I'm saying? Kids are abused at your baby's soccer practice. Like, unfortunately, it sounds ugly, but when I'm in crisis, I need you to be there for me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I don't really care about your reasons or excuses. And that sounds really ugly, but I'm sorry. That's just really how I feel about it. If you really can't devote, you know, that time, and if your family can't support you to understand that that's what needs to happen, then maybe you need to do an administrative job or a support job and not be in the field. You know what I'm saying?
I'm with you, and I feel that way. And I have a hard time saying it because I think, you know, people feel like I'm being self-righteous when I say that. And as a matter of fact, when I was doing it, I think there was some – actually, I got an acknowledgement from the administration, you know, for the work that I'd done on my caseload because they were all considered to be high-risk, you know, hard-to-place children, sibling groups, older minorities. And I just recall – response from, you know, some of the others that, you know, well, she doesn't have to do this, but, you know, it's like, that was my choice, you know, so I believe that maybe then you should do something else because, you know, to be effective, you have, but so I'm glad to hear that from you because I wasn't trying to toot my own horn, but that's just how strongly I feel about it.
You know, so
I have one more recommendation that
job is for you, I would tell you.
Say that again.
Any other job, they would tell you, well, maybe this job is just not for you. Any other job.
Okay. I have one other recommendation. I feel that social services should limit the information they give to the foster parent regarding the birth parent and the child's family, because so much mostly all of the verbal and emotional abuse I went through in the system was from my family. You know, they would bring up that my mother had mental issues, and they knew things that I felt that they should not have known.
Okay. In Alabama, you know nothing about the child you get or what they. In Alabama, they limit what they tell them.
They should only know. You know, what's going on with the child medically, you know, psychologically, things of that nature, and just know that the child is in care for a reason. That's all you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need to know, unless the child was, you know, maybe a crack baby or something like that. That's all they need to know. You don't need to know that my mother was.
But I've been in foster care situations where, you know, there's usually more than one kid, right? And there's always mm-hmm. somebody's crazy parents. And, you know, don't take it personally because my mother's bipolar, so, you know, included. You know, showing up at the house trying to see their kid at 3 o'clock in the morning because my mama's drunk. You know what I'm saying? And I know that for the foster parents that I had, you know, in my homes, it was one that I was in that was a really good home. And all the kids had to be removed from her home because one of the kids' crazy parents kept showing up creating drama. And then she says some stuff about the lady and whatever, so they took us all out of her home so they could investigate or whatever. So, I mean, I definitely understand that feeling of, like, you know, they're using it against me, kind of, but there has to also be a balance. Because if this person, I have to deal with this person, because, you know, we still get visitation and stuff like that for most of us, you know, then I need to know what I'm up against, kind of.
Wow. And that's a whole other conversation. And not only is May National Foster Care Month, it's National Mental Health Month and also Mother's Day. So I really want to do a program during that month talking about issues related to children who have parents with mental illness, issues with biological families, and as well as foster pride. So hopefully you'll be able to participate in that call. So we're down to probably about 30 seconds. And actually, we could continue the call, but the listeners would not be able to hear who are not on the phone call. So I just really appreciate, I hope you've gotten some value out of this call, and I just really appreciate your input. Please go to our Facebook page and leave a note, and even more so, leave a comment on the Blog Talk page. And the lady says we have 10 seconds, so thank you for calling. Bless your heart, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. E.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.